I hear we're live.
Yes, we are.
Chocolate.
We're live. Yeah, this is Ghostly Doctor. I am the Reverend Scott L.
I can't follow that. I'm Doug.
And I'm Karma. Hallelujah.
Feeling very prophetic today and religious. Yeah. I watched the prophecy today, so Christopher Walken is walking around in my brain.
Yes, and evidently he's going to influence the show.
You know what? I don't know if anybody's seen that movie, The Prophecy, but the coolest thing he does, people who, like, walk into a morgue to, like, you know, you just can't walk into a morgue, right? You know.
But he can.
Yeah. He walks in there with his leather pants and shit, like all tough, all looking tough and stuff like that. And he walks, but the guard, hey, what are you doing? Shh. And the guy just goes, hits the floor. It's like, wonderful. I would love to have that kind of power to say, man, hey, man, what's your breath? Shh.
You can get laid every weekend.
Oh.
I'm teasing.
We know you're teasing.
We know you do. You're in a band, for crying out loud.
Yeah, that's why I don't get laid. Are you kidding me? Okay, no more laid.
Oh, anyway. I'm sorry.
This really is Ghostly Talk.
We should start over again. All
right. No, we finally started on time for a change, so I want to keep it that way.
We just can't get it right, though. We can't keep it clean, and we can't be on time.
I know. It's really bizarre.
Corporate's going to tear us down.
I'm trying to do good. Both. I haven't been that way in a while.
Well, you don't remember what you did last night?
Oh, yeah.
You're the one with the camera, not me. I mean, review your tapes.
That'll be edited out.
In case you're wondering, Scott L. and his band, my favorite plaid straight jacket.
Destroyed Ann Arbor last night.
They actually should have had a straight jacket on.
Yeah, they took over Ann Arbor.
Well, I haven't really moved that much yet. I'm just kind of
sitting behind the microphone.
I didn't even do anything, and I'm sore. I think I'm sore from watching you. I swear.
Hurts, don't it?
Hurts,
don't it?
There's the flu that's going around up there.
Yeah, we all got SARS now.
Oh, man.
We're all going to die. So if we don't make it to the broadcast, thank you. It's been nice working for you guys or with you guys or whatnot. But regardless, we have a really cool show tonight.
Yes, we do. We have Diane Goodman-Larson on.
Yeah, she'll be coming out at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about some pretty wild stuff.
Yes.
Hopefully she won't start cursing.
I'm
in trouble.
I don't know
Sorry.
If she's that kind of person,
no,
but we'll find
cool.
out.
She's very cool.
But no, this is Ghostly Talk. Ghostly Talk airs on Pioneer Radio from 7 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday nights. Mm. That's when we're live. If you're hearing this at any other time on venues such as Pioneer, KSSX,
Moist
FM, Moist. Things like that.
I love that every week.
If you hear damp. If you're hearing us at any other time on venues such as that, and Radio New York International, mm-hmm. then, of course, we are not live at that time.
We're not live.
Yes, we are only live on Sundays on Pioneer.
Don't call us to throw the pool away and get off the internet.
Yeah, just send us an email like everyone else.
I just wanted to say I hope everybody had a nice Valentine's Day, and I was telling you guys, for being single, I got more stuff than when I was... What is it?
Isn't that awesome?
I got a lot of stuff. And like I was telling you, I think people felt sorry for me.
I don't know. I think they're just trying to vie for your affection.
I got flowers.
Oh, my God.
Some chick bought me a car, man. I was like... That's a nice car, but...
I don't want that one.
You're still
Could
ugly.
You got me a red... Could you got me a red Pinot instead of a yellow?
Yeah.
Was it a Pinot?
No.
That wasn't your Pinot?
That was my Pinot. It was a caddy sitting out in front of my condo.
Oh, it was a caddy.
Yeah, it was nice.
The girl's car was
the bling spinner wheels on it and stuff.
I know you guys hate those things, but I think spinner wheels are cool.
I think if you're 19,
cool.
you're in the wrong line of work to own those things. I couldn't afford them, to be honest with you. But no, they're nice.
They're nice.
Well, you look kind of stupid sitting there at a red light and your wheels are still spinning, man. It don't look right to me.
My brother had explained that to me. I'm like, is it attached to the axle? Is that why it's still... He's like, no, there's bearings in the wheels. Keep it spinning.
Kind of
a roller skate.
Yeah, it's just like the friction or whatever, centrifugal force, momentum, all
that. We gave out Valentine's to all the girls at the show last night. The band did.
That was really
cool. We bought Valentine's cards and put like almost 18, like from... I mean, two almost 18 chick from MFPS, you know.
That wasn't the only message.
We put some pretty disgusting stuff in there.
Karma, do you know what we forgot to do before the show? Because we were enjoying the pre-show
much. Hey, this is really great. You know what? You guys go ahead and talk, because I know exactly what's going on here.
Yes, because we didn't plug in the telephone.
Go ahead. I got you guys.
Oh, that's my job.
No, it's mine, too. Half mine, and I completely forgot about it. But anyway, there is a couple things that I want to talk about, though. I think it might be that one up there. Up top. No, over here, Karma. See if that's the plug-in for the telephone. Yeah, some technical difficulties going on. Anyway, so what I want to talk about, though, I desperately want to talk about what we did for the past two Friday nights.
Mm-hmm.
Karma came over two Friday nights ago. Last Friday you had to work, but we ended up watching the Montauk videos.
Did Scott tell you I had to work? Because I didn't tell him that.
Oh, I just thought you had to work.
I hadn't had any sleep.
Oh, okay.
It was
no.
Like at midnight, so I was up all day doing.
Oh, okay. Well, regardless, I knew you weren't able to make it on Friday, but yeah. I just figured you'd gotten to you just had to work. But regardless, I know you didn't make it for the second video, but you did see the first video,
mm-hmm.
and then the part of the third video with.
That's with Phil Schneider.
With Phil Schneider.
At the very end of the third video.
The end of the third video. And then on Friday, the only thing you missed really was, well, some excitement going on at Scott L's pad.
Oh.
But also you missed the...
He had to work it in, didn't he?
What? Yeah.
What?
Nothing.
Either the cops were called, someone puked.
No.
Or someone's
burying a child now, yeah.
The FJ...
No.
The FJ had come...
No, would you stop it? Now he's not going to what? Well, go ahead.
FJ.
Too late now.
The fat Jesus.
He came clean?
No. Oh, gosh, no. No.
Clean?
No, he had company over.
It's not his vocabulary.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's some excitement going on. But then the...
Did you guys hear sound effects?
yeah, we did.
We were actually...
As a matter of fact, I was 2 seconds away from putting my digital recorder outside the
door. We were considering taking the digital recorder.
It was steamy, smoking, just disgusting hot. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
So we're trying to watch the Montauk video, and like, you know, so 27 years ago, I built this new thing, and... Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, pause.
Yeah. It's pretty hot. What do you guys think?
You guys, he should know better because your apartment isn't.
You don't care.
I mean, your condo.
Apartment.
Oh, man.
Your condo, it's not like it's a 3-story house where, you know, you can go in the
It isn't the Delta house by any means, but.
Yeah,
he must feel real comfortable around you guys.
No, it really isn't a matter of comfort. It's a matter of he just doesn't care.
You know what's funny is the girl's probably like, oh, they're going to hear us. But keep going.
No, he even popped out. He's like, ding. Yeah. We're like, ooh.
Now, you see, you're gonna blow all the trade secrets we have.
I know.
You know what? Sometimes you got to take it to the floor, though, so it's like not as
much
noisy.
Quieter.
Yeah, so
yeah.
The neighbors downstairs can get pissed off at you. Yeah.
But anyway, besides all that excitement, we did watch the Montauk video. We watched the second one. So what I have to say...
Nosy.
Would you break?
Is my screen any different than yours?
Disconnected, so
oh.
I'm sure you didn't get disconnected.
Oh. Oh, yeah. See, I told you we were going to get kicked off the internet.
Because server being down would be bad.
Yeah. Oh, no, well, we appear to be online.
Good.
Yeah.
Hey,
up,
well,
good,
your,
down,
your
bad.
Your mic sounds like a call-in.
Does it? Oh, yeah. It does sound like...
You're a bit tinny there, Mr. Will. Regardless, though, we did watch the first two videos.
We watched the first one the first Friday night, and then the last part of the third video that two Friday nights ago.
We'll finish
then last Friday night, we watched the second video.
Mm-hmm.
Rock.
Oh,
I mean, this stuff rocks. If you haven't done it, go to Bill Nell's site. There's a link up.
AlienGuy.CJB.net. We have a link on our front page.
There's a link at GhostlyTalk.com, and he's in there, Bill Nell. And we had done
cool
a special.
Guy. God, what a cool guy.
We had done a special, which actually usually attracts more attention than the regular Ghostly Talks. But we had done a special with Bill Nell on a Thursday, sometime in early January.
Yeah.
And totally blew us away. Montauk is tied in with the Philadelphia experiment.
It's actually tied in with four projects.
Tied
Phoenix
in with
1 and Phoenix,
Phoenix
2.
Yeah, the Phoenixes. And of course, his videos, the videos that he offers for sale
mm-hmm.
on the site, that's what we got.
Yeah.
And we watched them.
Yeah.
It's very informational, and they're very detailed.
That's the thing.
That's the thing. It isn't for someone who's like, let's watch a movie. It's like, okay, I really want to like learn about this particular thing.
There were times when we were sitting there, and all four of us, there was, you know, two chairs, the couch, everybody's like huddled around the TV set.
Lazy boys
and stuff, and we're sitting there with our refreshments and everything, and there were times when, you know, when we actually were so amazed at the stuff that was being said and described and shown on these videos that we paused and talked about it.
Yeah,
and we're like, oh my gosh, well, where does this fit in? Where does that fit in? Because Scott had seen much of it before we got there.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, later on they talk about that, and you know, so he could fill us in. This is stuff that you'd have to watch several times, really, to get down. Because
there's just too much. There's
so
each of the videos
much
are at least
info.
2.5 hours. Okay. Uh oh.
Well.
Did we break?
Are we being heard?
Are we broken? Hello, anyone home?
Well, you know what I was gonna say. I've told a few people about these videos, and I was discussing it over dinner at my dad's house, and my stepmom was just like...
It says we're online.
We're trying to eat. I'm like, I'm not saying anything that's disgusting. I'm not going into details about the guy with the fingers missing and stuff.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, that, I don't believe that. There's a guy at work that's always going down to medical. Now, mind you, she works for the IRS.
Yeah.
He went down to the nurse and said that he thinks that he was anal probed last night. By an alien. He is convinced that he's in a, you know...
Well, he should be smiling today. He should be happy to come to work.
Because his hip hurt, he said. That's
his
how,
hip hurt.
That's how he knows that he...
Well, they must have done a real good job, huh?
That's
I mean, they must have really, you know...
She's like, he's such a... I go, do you ever consider for a second that maybe he is telling the truth?
Possibly could happen.
And I'm like, he's not alone. There's a lot of people out there that have came forward and said...
Yeah, something happened here.
Something's wrong.
Well, there's a lot more to it. These videos go into detail about, they go into a lot of detail, well, especially with Phil Schneider towards, on the third tape that we watched the end of it with Mr. Phil Schneider, who he taught, the thing that blew me away, Doug's going to, like, check our connection and see if we're not kicked off the internet yet, but, Phil Schneider talked about a lot of things, such as different elements. Now, typically, well, right now in our day and age, we have 104 elements on our periodic table, chart of elements. And he introduced two elements in his speech that we all watched. One was Myronite. That's element 123. And if I remember correctly, he said that particular element, that particular piece could withstand temperatures.
2,000.
I think he said 5,000, actually. 5,000 degrees.
There was one that was over 10,000 degrees.
No, that was...
That melts down.
That was... oh, crap. Now I'm going to... Carbon... No, it wasn't carbonite. It was... Man, now I'm totally forgetting. That was the one he introduced later on.
Oh, yeah.
That was, this was like the ultimate. This was element 140. I believe he did say this was the top of the chart right here. 140 was as high as they went so far. I have it written down. I totally wrote it down. It wasn't carbonite, Will. Oh, God. Brain fart.
He brought up titanium, too. Where they got the idea for that.
Yeah, and they said that they didn't get the idea from titanium from non-terrestrial people. Non-terrestrial beings or whatnot.
I believe them.
This particular element he was talking about, though, God, not carbonite. I don't want to say boronite. It may be boronite. I got to remember it. But
I think it started with a C, but it was this little tiny piece of blackness.
Metal.
Well, what he said was...
14 ounces?
Said, no, I think it was 15 ounces. Yeah, 14 ounces. 14 ounces, you're
it
right.
It was just under a pound.
He's like, this little piece right here weighs 14 ounces. This is as dense as it gets right here.
That's the super heavy.
Yeah, it can withstand temperatures of 1,000,000 degrees. Which we never even... That's astronomical.
Right.
As far as temperatures go on this planet. I mean, that would melt the planet. We don't know of anything that could withstand a temperature like that. That would literally just melt the whole planet. These were developed by alien beings who have a problem with the way things are going as far as our relationship with them. Now, of course, there's so many of us here on the planet that don't even realize we have a relationship with them, and I can't say for sure that we do have a relationship with them, but that's another thing that Mr. Schneider got into also, is that there are under us, there are hundreds of underground bases, miles in size.
And his job, one of his jobs was to help build these things. And he describes how they're built.
You know, typically, I mean, from my experience with, you know, digging underground, you tunnel through. That's a pretty difficult job, because when you tunnel down, you have rubble. And part of the job is bringing the rubble up. what they did, their particular process. They have a machine. They have
alien technology.
Alien technology that literally takes the rock, powders it down to a fine powder, and melts it. And that what that does in the process of that, it takes that rock and smooths it as it's melting and makes the walls. So it's one step, basically, as opposed to knocking, tunneling through and then building walls up to make it look all pretty and stuff.
So he describes these underground bases that they build and, mm-hmm. and how many levels they are. And, mm-hmm. and for example, Area 51,
mm-hmm.
you know,
Area
50, like
Grim
that.
Lake. That's what that's in the same
Grim Lake, yeah, same Grim stuff. Lake. And he says that's actually a mega base underground.
Yeah,
is
huge,
a mega base,
huge.
And it's got tons and tons of stuff going on under there. But also that many of them are connected.
Yeah, by
This train, this elevated train that works on, you know, maglev technology,
which is a quarter that the train sits a quarter inch off the track.
Yeah,
so it like hovers. It's a hover.
And I don't remember. I think he said it's like
Mach five times
the speed of sound.
Wow.
Yeah. Underground.
Underground, and they could go from base to base like this. These are the things that he talked about, and Phil Schneider came out with this. He did die mysteriously. He said they ruled it as a suicide. He wrapped a tube around his neck and choked himself. That's what they said.
I just wanted to say, I know you brought this up, Doug, that the weirdest thing about watching that video is knowing that this guy is no longer alive.
Oh, definitely.
What he feels that the American people and people in general should have the right to know.
Like, they should know about this.
He was promoting big time in his video. You guys need to get together and demand that they come forth with information.
He believes in a constitutional government.
Right.
He believes in a constitutional rule, first and foremost. And by what these people are doing, if everything he said to the letter was true.
Even if only a section of what he said to the letter was true.
Then they are basically taking the Constitution and throwing it on the ground. And that's basically what's going on.
It's a conditional Constitution.
Yeah, so he discussed a lot of things. He did discuss when they were tunneling the one time, there was a story he told when they were tunneling.
To push it down.
When they were tunneling down in, they did hit a base where aliens were hiding out. And these were the large grays. I believe they were the large grays. He states that there's 11 different races. There's 9 that are good. I mean, I'm sorry. There's 9 that are bad news, basically, and 2 that are benevolent, is what he says, benevolent. And they're here to help. But the other 9, you know, they really don't want anything to do with us. He did discuss the alien agenda, too. And the alien agenda is very simple. It's the New World Order and the alien agenda are one. That's one thing he said that was very, he kept repeating that. The New World Order and the alien agenda are one. One of the things he did discuss that really freaked us all out was that there is one race that the government worked a deal out with them. They give us technology and we give them bodies, basically.
Right.
Cow bodies, human bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is our glandular secretions.
I know, I found that very...
sick, for one thing, but hey.
Sick, but I'm like...
disturbing.
I'm like, yeah, that could be, because...
Yeah, what they do is, literally, they didn't eat them, he said. They didn't literally eat people, like, you know, here's a leg, you know. They didn't eat people, but the glandular secretions that we do give off, and my stupid phone's ringing, and I'm going to get fired.
Are like, food to them.
No, we're going to make fun, you know, hang on, I'm going to make fun of this fool right here, okay? Hello?
What up?
Rabbit, I'm going to kick you in the head next time I see you, okay?
What did I do?
It's Sunday night, and it's after 7 p.m., and what do I do on Sunday nights after 7 p.m.?
What's that?
What do I do on Sunday nights after 7 p.m.?
It rhymes with mostly talk.
Yeah, I just want to see how you... I know you're going to find you the answer, I'll leave you a voicemail.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, say...
Why you put me on there? Give me off the goddamn radio.
Hey, Rabbit, everybody's listening to you right now, dude.
Hi, I'm 5'10", I got dark hair. It hangs long to
the right. Last time he called, when he found out he was live, he was like...
What's that? What's that, man? What'd you say?
I'm going to talk.
We're done at 9:00. Why don't you call me then?
I'll call you up. Okay, I got this thing about artist trying to do band thing. I got the website. I want you to look it up.
Okay, cool. All right, yeah, excellent. Give me a call about 9:15. All right.
Sounds good.
All right, cool, man. We'll see you.
It was good last night, Rabbit.
Oh.
Oh.
I think he hung up.
He might not have.
Sorry, I had to do that. Let me set this thing to vibrate, man. So anyways, no.
He was talking. Vibrate, right?
It's on vibrate here. So yeah, he did discuss a lot of stuff. No, they did dig into one base, and that's where you look at this guy is missing two fingers.
Mm-hmm.
He said they did come down. They tunneled down.
The one thing that Bill Schneider said about Phil Schneider on Ghostly Talk, the special bonus Ghostly Talk, was that every time you met him, every time you met Schneider, he would show you a new bullet wound.
Yeah.
It's not funny, but...
Because, I know, it's not funny,
well,
but...
Well, he found it kind of funny. He was kind of giggling.
It is kind of...
over here.
Yeah, surely,
and,
yeah.
But the guy's missing fingers.
He's missing fingers and
part of one, too.
Yeah.
You can clearly tell it's something of electrical charge.
Well, his hand was totally... Well, how that happened, he discussed, is when they tunneled down... They were
and
lowered
they found
down.
The they, 7 foot aliens.
They
or whatever,
yeah, they found the large grays, and he ended up shooting a couple of them.
Two of them.
Yeah, he shot two of them, I believe. And the one did something like he just went across his chest. There was a blue thing on his chest.
Held his hand up.
Yeah, but he went across his chest with his hand and did something.
And then
activated some kind of weapon
and just burned him.
He said it was like being hit by lightning.
Yeah.
And it blew a hole in his chest. Stomach area.
Yeah, he said it opened me up like a bag of chips or something like that.
Yeah.
And it burned his hands up. His fingers off. He said it turned... he couldn't show his foot, but he said it turned my right foot into a crispy critter. That's exactly what he said.
Yeah, yeah.
The things this gentleman was talking about were just numbing. They really were.
There was that part with Phil Schneider was obviously just absolutely incredible. But before that, you know, we had watched the first of the three. That's on the latter half of the third video.
Yeah, the last part of the third video.
Well, the first video was who was it? Duncan Cameron. Duncan Cameron and Al Bielek.
Al Bielek, Duncan Cameron,
and Preston Nichols.
Yeah, Preston Nichols.
Talking on that Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
It was a home movie.
Home movie. I mean, very, very, I don't want to say low budget because Bill did a very good job on this, but this was done like 20 years ago, too, mind you. This was done in 1989. So
yeah.
A good, 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
But even back then, I mean, video camera technology wasn't that good.
It's not about the production.
No, it's about the content.
It is
but
the content.
I mean, it starts off with Preston Nichols. Talking about
everything.
Yeah, he starts out with this long thing about weather balloons.
Yeah,
and how that was the precursor to the Phoenix project.
Yeah, weather controls. Where it all started.
Weather control, and then into the Phoenix projects, and then
mind control,
and Philadelphia experiments, disappearing boats and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They talk. They're sitting there. Three respectable-looking fellows, and obviously very well-known, Preston Nichols, Duncan Cameron, and Al Bielek,
mm-hmm.
are sitting there and talking very matter-of-factly
mm-hmm.
about all this stuff that your jaw hits the floor.
Because
if this stuff exists, or existed...
We're in big trouble, man.
Yeah.
I believe them, because if they were lying, they have a hell of an imagination.
Right.
The technical
prowess alone, they got into the specifications.
Yeah,
stuff that was
deep.
Beyond me, but I have a fundamental understanding of what they were talking about as far as voltage goes. And when somebody throws a gigawatt at me, that's a lot of power.
And they had four of those generators? Three or four of them. One was the backup.
Was at Montauk. That was used to run the machinery. And each of those motors, those were locomotive engines, diesel locomotive engines, that kicked out a megawatt of power.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
That's still sick. Okay, that's a lot, and there was four of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just ridiculous. That's somewhat,
it was for a reason.
Well,
they directed it at that one building with the chair.
Yeah, that was...
Where Duncan Cameron would be sitting
about,
and...
What was it, that satellite...
The size of a football field, dish. And they show many, many photos of it.
Yeah.
They show
it in contrast to the back, like the skyline. I mean, they took a bunch of pictures of it just to show the size of this particular radar dish. Because it's the biggest one I've ever seen.
Well, what I find is that particular segment of the video, or really a lot of the individual segments of the video,
uh-huh.
are actually kind of boring.
They do,
but
you have to listen. That's the thing.
Well,
it's
hard. Not only do you have to listen to understand what they're talking about, what they're mm-hmm. doing, but also you have to remember that this is probably the only publicly available
medium, this medium for this information?
Documentation
and medium to present this information, and every single second of the, of those videos is important.
Those guys should have had ski masks on.
Yeah, well, everybody knows what they look like.
Well,
you know,
I was
this
like,
is Duncan Carrot.
Well, I don't know, but I felt concerned for their safety. The one guy, I don't remember his name,
well,
the guy that started off talking.
That was
Preston
Nichols.
He talked so much. I thought the other two were his bodyguards or something.
Yeah, you would think. And I wonder what they do for security. You know, what does Preston Nichols and
Duncan... They
probably
don't come out of their house.
I don't, yeah, Duncan Cameron doesn't come out much. He does not come out of the house much, and
he's a very reserved man already. You can just see that by even his manner and his speaking. He's pretty reserved. Al
does the circuit.
Yeah, Al,
you know,
talks to people. And
he
he's
talks
around.
To people, and he gets out. Preston Nichols, I hadn't heard much from him, except for this,
except for the video. They. Yeah, Preston started out.
Preston started out, and he continued on.
But he was the one that really talked about the technical end of it.
He really discussed
the technical end of it. Duncan Cameron was really talking about the psychic end of it.
Yep.
The psychic engineering they were using to time, literally travel time, go back and forth.
Right.
And that's where it started to really put the hook in. Because we're discussing things like, there was a few people there that had really, really good questions.
Right.
They're like, okay, so, you know, for example, if you go back in time, say you go from 83 to 43 or whatever, like they did, like the Philadelphia experiment.
Right.
And Montauk, that's how they're connected. You go back and from 83 to 43 and you come back, you know, what... Can you change the future? No, because you closed that loop already. Sorry, I mean,
right.
It's hard to get your head around that.
Yeah, that's now a closed time loop.
You've literally closed that loop. Now the big thing before we take a break here, because we gotta get Diane on the phone. The big thing they talked about is that after 2012,
this is another place where this made us all go. This is where all of our collective jaws hit the floor, and we were shocked, and we stopped the tape
and
to talk about it. 2012. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, yeah,
Duncan Cameron said this.
Yeah, he did say this. They're like, you know, well, they the first question they asked was, okay, how far have you went? Well, 10,000.
I thought it was 6,000.
They said 10,000.
Okay.
They said they went as far as 10,000. And they're like, you know,
so
what's 10,000 like? And they're like, well, it's a very dreamlike state. We really don't see much. There's not really, I can't really, you know, anything before.
They talk about an abandoned city and a statue or something like
that.
That's in 6,000, though. But the furthest they went was 10,000, like you said.
And everything seems to be like a dreamlike state. That's all they could really say. They couldn't say too much more than that.
And someone asked the question,
how far can we go? How far have you, you know, what do you guys think? How can you guys estimate this? How far do we go? What's the breaking point here that it starts to get weird like this, where we don't really know what's going on? He's like, around 2012, 2013, around there. And the whole place is like, hey, that's the end of the Mayan calendar. Here comes Preston. Yeah, Preston said it. Curious, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all he said. Curious, isn't it?
Do you guys realize how much that year has been coming up lately?
I know.
2012.
It's been
2012 has been, like, really on a lot of people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the lady that we had on, the Ogren lady?
Nancy Miller Ogren.
She talked about that, how for the next, up until
the next
2012,
segment of, yeah.
That we would have, like, it would be good for the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, I've heard so much about 2012, and...
Yeah.
Well, it might be the fact that you're seeing it, you're looking for it now, too.
Yeah, that's
true. Another thing too. I always think about that.
But when he said 2012, I immediately I'm like,
well, yeah,
pause that video.
Yeah, we gotta talk about
it. Because I listen to that. I listen for that all the time.
That's
we gotta get Nancy
too
or
far
Nancy.
Away.
I know
it's not too far away at all, and it's something for people to think about. But regardless, check out Bill Mell's videos.
Go
to his site. At least read his site. You know, this stuff is pretty far out. I know. And it's pretty far out even for us, because these are things we talk about the paranormal on here, and these are things that are they're a bit intangible. We're trying to capture them, trying to document them, and make them tangible. But what these guys are talking about, basically, it's a very tangible thing. This is machinery. This is real life
technology.
These are things that are being built by humans to do these wild things like travel time, mind control, make a chip disappear in front of your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that supposedly happen. Right in front of a whole group
people's
of people.
Eyes, yeah.
And there's numbers of people out there that do talk about this stuff, the same exact thing.
That wind up dead.
Yeah, they tend to, don't they?
That's interesting. That's the weird part about it.
But curious,
it's something
isn't
to think about. It's a mystery in its own right. It's a mystery in its own right. That's why we find it so fascinating. Let's take a break, though.
We got to get Diane Goodman-Larson on the phone.
So we'll be right back after these messages.
Oh, thanks, Scott.
It's paranormal and scientific. It's ghostly. Stagehand tools.
You have tools. Know where to put them? Want your hands free to do other things? Try a stagehand tool belt. Stagehand tool belts can accommodate any task, whether you're building a stage or bringing down a haunted house.
Stagehand tools.
For all your industry needs, we have, for example, EMT pouches, radio pouches, tape measure holders, mailbags, and numerous flashlight accessories. Just go to
www.stagehandtools.com
and see all the cool stuff that Stagehand Tools has for you.
www.stagehandtools.com.
We know where to stick it.
Hello, this is Aaron.
This is Jennifer.
And something very dark would like you to listen to Ghostly Talk.
Hi there, this is Heidi Hollis with AlienAdvice.com, where I try to give you some insight on anything that's a little bit strange. I actually have a question today from somebody named Sissy, and Sissy asks, I'm interested in aliens, but now I'm confused. As a believer in aliens, do you think that God is real, or do you believe that God does not exist? I'd love to hear what you think, because I don't know how this would affect my opinions on aliens. Sissy, I get this kind of question all the time, and I say, you know, who says there are any limits in this world of no limitations? Yes, I believe in God and aliens, too. I mean, who do you think created the aliens? It's been my experience that a lot of aliens acknowledge there is a God, and it's just kind of a common sense type of thing. So believe it or not, there's room enough in our heads and hearts to believe in the existence of aliens, and that God is real, too. So this isn't a talk between good and evil. It's just about taking in the facts, taking in the facts, taking in the facts, taking in the facts.
When she said, the world is lonely, silver clouds are crying only for the pain she feels so deep inside. The love she thought would save her has somehow now enslaved her to her dream she thought she wanted to come through.
Spread your wings, you can fly. Nothing dark is ever free. In painted skies, to change the color of your dreams. Lonely
come.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Karma.
And, yes, so, okay. Sorry about the little bit of technical stuff in the first half hour. You know, that happened. But, you know, it's all going to be in the archives, you guys.
We put the fire out. So
yeah, we put the fire out. We're back on live.
The server lit up right in front of us.
Yeah.
we keep a fire extinguisher on hand just for little things.
Actually,
like
I have
that.
To fess up. I dumped my drink in it.
Oh, okay. That's what it is.
So we threw a penny in there and kept it going.
Yeah.
Right.
But we have, but we did get to talk about Bill Nell and those videos, which are just totally amazing.
Yeah.
Check out his link on our site. Our site is, of course, ghostlytalk.com.
Mm-hmm. Can I give a quick shout out?
Okay.
Thank you, Bonnie, so much.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Chocolate.
She made our Valentine's
Day. Living color for a second there.
My hips are getting bigger.
Yeah, I think I actually put on 10 pounds just looking at the bag.
It was awesome. Thank you. Yeah, happy thanks. Valentine's really Day, Bonnie.
And yes, I'll be your sweetheart.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking.
So anyway, here we go. What we have for you now is a return guest.
Yes.
To Ghostly Talk. Mm-hmm. I know you guys all remember Diane Goodman Larson.
Yes, she's the author of Door to Atlantis.
Door to Atlantis. Mm-hmm. Oh, hooray. And yes, and yeah, Door to Atlantis, and it's doortoatlantis.com. There's a link up on our website to her website.
Yes.
And today, though, we're going to be talking with Diane Goodman Larson about Mars. Now, it's been in all over the news. You can't get away from Mars right now because of the, you know, the Spirit rover and you know, those things that are sampling the soil and things like that.
Those real expensive remote-controlled cars.
And, yeah, and of course, presidential election, because George Bush said that he wants to put people on Mars.
That means that he'll be in for another
term. You know what he should do? He should put the right people on Mars, the ones that are stupid.
Like us. Oh, wait, you said stupid. I said us.
I don't want to go on Mars.
You guys ready to go for a little flight?
No, that's a long flight. But what we have for you is somebody who knows all about this stuff. So we're going to be talking with Diane Goodman Larson. And hey, Diane, welcome to Ghostly Talk.
Hi, Scott and everyone. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, definitely.
Hey.
Definitely. Yeah, you sort of blew our minds with the Door to Atlantis stuff and your experience of Atlantis.
Yeah.
But I understand now you've got info about Mars.
I do. I have some additional information that has been being analyzed and so on over the last couple of weeks since the probes have started sending back the photographs. And it's very exciting for all of us, and I look forward to sharing some of it with you. I also have a little bit of information from previous missions also to mention, from analysis of photographs that were taken and sent back to us from a few years ago.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Where do you want to start? We'll take our, well, like I said during the break, we'll take our cues from you because you've got all the information. You know how to present it, right?
Okay, well, last time we left off, we were talking about a warning that I had received a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That was part of a dream, part of a time travel event that had occurred where I was taken up by a very powerful being. We were literally flying through the skies. And following that warning, I was given a few, recommendations about something coming into our atmosphere. And what I did was, it was such heavy material that I thought it was more than I could handle. And I passed it on to a NASA official that I was working with by the name of Throg at that time. During the dream or the time travel event, I was shown that religious leaders were up in arms about this situation. That is something that's probably in the future timeline of planet Earth. I saw discussions occurring between the scientists of NASA, of the European Space Agency, discussions occurring that were heated discussions among priests in what I call the highest church of the land. And they were literally discussing something about near misses and close passerbys and things like that coming through our atmosphere, asteroids or meteors. And what I had at that time that I passed on to this NASA official was the recommendations. There were about three of them. The first one was that NASA get something up into space, something that can observe and something that can pave the way for an intercept mission. The second recommendation was that we should not wait until the year 2005 to send up this observation intercept vehicle for the imminent arrival of what might be an asteroid. And they were concerned, the people who gave me, these beings who gave me the warning, were very concerned that our timing here on the planet with our space agencies was going to be a bit off. The third recommendation was that we have the European Space Agency send up something into the sky for observation right now. At that time, that was about the year 2002 or so, they're about 2002-2001. For this intercept mission planned and implemented based on the observations that we will be gathering right now. And as you can see, what's occurring is that these probes are actually beginning to go up. They've sent up the Opportunity, they've sent up the Mars Explorer rover, they've sent up the Spirit. The Beagle went up, and you know, there were a few problems there. And what this warning was that I received, literally, quote-unquote, was this. On February 13th, 2000, just like this warning was given to the Atlanteans over 13,000 years ago, it was once again given to us, given to me, and it goes this way. If a civilization of people were told, it is time to get something up into the sky, and then the gods decided that it might set them back significantly to do that, would it still be worth it to try? A civilization that was in danger of a cataclysm of some kind, but one of some magnitude. And basically, that was it, quote-unquote, with a little part at the end saying that, you know, we have to try to find a way to save the world. So now we've seen, following that and some of the interviews and discussions I've had and the information from the book, that these probes are being sent up. So it's very exciting to see all of the pictures that are coming back. Some of them are about rocks. Some that were coming in from the orbiter, which is the counterpart to the Beagle, which didn't work out very well. Some of those pictures were spectacular. The American Spirit Rover and Opportunity have been sending back pictures from surrounding craters and landscapes showing the beautiful red sands of Mars, the rocks, and bringing with them speculation about metal fragments, and our emotions are just soaring right now. So it's all very exciting. The pictures are very striking. And what's evident about the structures on the Martian desert floor, which I've observed, is that you can see in the photos from the orbiters, it reflects a civilization and a culture where art predominated almost everything, art and architecture predominated whatever this ancient civilization might have been from hundreds of thousands of years ago. In some of the earlier missions that were sent up, where the probes were sending back a few more things, like the pictures of the face on Mars, desert floor around Cydonia. You see scattered everywhere on the desert floor faces and figures, among other things. And what I found was that some of these things correspond to places here on Earth, like Nazca, Peru, South America, Mexico, and Atlantis. Some of the structures that we have down here on our planet, and even in places like Egypt. So, you know, you look at the blue skies of the pictures coming back in the recent photos, or the blue and the red skies, and what they've generated a flurry of speculation and controversy, bringing back discussion of an old video called Alternative 3 from several years ago,
yes.
Actually from 1962, where this tape showed somehow that European researchers found footage of what looks like life on Mars.
Yes.
Which at that time was an animal moving beneath the rocks of the red planet.
We did see that video. Actually, there was a site.
Making the surface. Yeah, yeah, this was back in 1962. It was very controversial.
Mm-hmm. We did see that video. Will actually showed me that video, that particular video. Will, if you remember, you were like, hey, check this out. And I got to see that also. And it's a wild video. It's an official video. And the thing is, Diane, it looks like people are landing on Mars, though.
Well, that's what the video actually showed, that there were people that were sent there.
Yeah.
And to some extent, they had settled down there and may have done a few things, like maybe terraforming the planet and so on. That's what the speculation is. But of course, it has been dismissed as a hoax, and I believe that's where it will stay until we have some sort of verification about that. But if you looked at it and you want to believe in it, it would have been pretty exciting because they showed a little animal of some kind moving around, just under the surface of the soil. So that was pretty exciting to see. But we don't know for sure that there's anything true about whatever that was. As of January, though, with the Spirit, the pictures that are coming back from Spirit, what we're seeing is that it shows little evidence of life on Mars at this point. And we're just seeing the rich red sandy soils, multiplicity of rocks and other images that look like lakes, algae, seas of ice, ice and frozen water. We see channels and all these things that are being analyzed right now. Some of what are being called canals from earlier missions and earlier photographs may very well be fossilized giant worm-like life forms, similar to what we had here, the giant dinosaurs that used to be here on Earth. They may have had some kind of a creature or an ancient life form that was literally giant-sized, because everything from that planet is a lot bigger than ours, that I like to call giant size. And it might have been a life form that at this point in time would be fossilized, and that could have been a giant worm. The tubular-looking holes that we see in some of the old photographs may have once been responsible for this type of being, which changed the elements and minerals to a fine powder, from deep down in the subterranean levels of the Earth. And they may have changed these minerals and elements to a fine powder similar to gold. And, for example, this creature could have been, because of its electrical nature, the giant-sized worm beings that lived in the subterranean levels, what we're calling canals and so on right now could be remnants of these life forms. And they may have created dunes, sort of like sand dunes also.
Hey, Diane?
Yeah.
The explorer robots that are on the surface of Mars right now, are they capable of taking samples of that and determining like this really is a fossilized being, or are they just calculated configured to like take just soil samples and bust apart rocks and stuff like that? I mean, how sophisticated are these mobile robotic laboratories?
Well, from our perspective, we consider them very sophisticated. As far as I know, they will be picking up sample of the soils, different sands, different muds, going into rocks. If they happen to come across, anything that might be fossilized, then we will have samples of those to be analyzed. So, yes, they're quite capable of analyzing these things, and so are we when the samples are returned back here to us, and whatever samples they have programmed into the rovers up there that can sort of instantly analyze and return information via our computers and satellites and whatever technology that we have going on. So, yes, we will be able to analyze things like that and find out whether or not they're fossilized beings. Right now there's a lot of speculation about some of the rocks that are up there that look like metallic structures, like metal, old metal. They could be, ancient volcanic rocks that may have been left over from what that crater is that we landed in there. or that could have been an impact crater for something from something that came in from outside. But absolutely, you know, our technology here, even though I feel to some extent that we could be somewhat better, but you know, hats off to our scientists who are going to extremes to work with the technologies, advance them so we can find out what was up there, if there was life, what kind of life there was, and so on. I think we'll eventually get these analyses done and get the results out. So yes, we'll be able to find out if they were fossilized beings.
When are they returning? Are they're returning this stuff then to Earth? So will someone will physically be able to look at this?
Well,
or are they
as far
just
as I know
data?
Now, the president has announced that he is scheduling or overseeing scheduling missions to manned missions to the moon once again, which is very exciting. What is more exciting is that he has announced that we will be sending manned missions to Mars. So then, you know, you literally have some of us up there walking around on the surface of the planet Mars, collecting soils and probably digging a little bit deeper than our little rover up there can do. I think that's only going to penetrate just a few inches into rocks and soils. So with actual people up there walking around, we can get a much wider variety of samples and, you know, from the surrounding areas. And perhaps provided they land in some of these more diverse areas where they may have ancient structures like the Cydonia area, for instance, that would be an excellent place to send some of the manned space missions for Mars, where they could, you know, get close-up shots of the pyramids, analyze the soils and whatever else they have around that area, and I think that will be really exciting. It's something to look forward to.
What about the mines that you hear about? Like, they're supposedly like a used to be somewhat of a mining.
I'm sorry, what was that?
A mining operation that was going on there that they're speculating that they see that they actually seem like the tracks.
Mining by whom? By
On Mars that they
by,
said that
by Mars would be my
mining by extraterrestrials, mining by Earth beings.
No, I'm saying do you have any information about how they were speculating that from what they see by the pictures that. At one time, there was some kind of a mining going on because of the
track. Yeah. Well, from some of the old pictures, you can see that there are all kinds of things that might have been going on. With my eye as an ancient Martian scientist priest, what I have seen is that the civilization that was there predominated everything with art and architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So they could very well have been all kinds of mining, all kinds of research that they were doing, research into the frozen lakes, similar to what we have here on our planet in the North and South Poles that we are actually now looking into in a large way, in a big way. And so they may have been all kinds of mining going on, not only from the people who may have been on that planet, but since then from people who use Mars as a sort of docking station over the last several thousand years, or even presently. We do have other life forms out there that move around through our solar system, and so they could be any number of people out there or beings out there doing mining right now. Well, what I see when I look with the eye of an artist or the eye of an ancient scientist priest is some of the photographs show that there's a multiple-dimensional type of art, like gigantic figures that you see carved out of the soils and out of the rocks and some of the mounds that are up there. What I saw recently in response to a memo concerning a Pleiadian connection was that there was an ancient Martian skull or an ancient Martian head or what could have been an Egyptian skull or head carved out of the rock. There was also an elephant head and other sculptures, and there are these animal figures also that are similar to the giant art sculptures that we see here in Nazca, Peru, in South America. So as we await new pictures and further information from the previous missions, which are those photographs are still being analyzed, you know, what I find is that it all reflects a wider expanse of the divine in the structures on the surface of Mars, from whoever the ancient civilization was that was there a long time ago, that did come here. So I like to say I'm living proof that ancient life from Mars came here to Earth a long time ago, and they actually landed in Atlantis.
Well, let's explore that after the break, then.
Let's take a quick break.
Because we want to take a quick break, and we want to definitely talk about that, because you've got engineering from Mars.
Genetic engineering.
Martian genetic engineering.
That these beings did, that the small contingent of Martian scientist priests did when they came here to Atlantis from Mars.
And that's what we'll find out about coming up next. Until then, enjoy the break.
Radio, hosted by certified paranormal investigators Rob and Bob. Sunday nights at midnight, only on Pirate Radio. For show information, visit us at wparanormal.com.
Hi, this is Tamara Thorne, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk with the hosts of Ghostbusting, Scott L. and Doug.
MrOlaf.com. See what you've been missing out on.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Services such as web and pop 3 email, image editing, and logo design at very low rates.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Free streaming and downloadable videos.
MrOlaf.com.
That's www.MROLAF.com.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
This is Fat Jesus, lead singer of the band Zero Recourse, and when I've arisen on a Sunday, I will check out the world through the eyes and ears of my boys in Ghostly Talk.
Part in the war for a leader. wish you were here.
Oh, no, no, none of that today.
No headbanging today.
I really need to see that video and just see how ridiculous I look.
No.
With all my nasty, sweaty hair.
My brother's in, he's like, whoa. He's like, I understand the picture on the Jones Soda now.
Oh, with the hair, yeah.
Well, Alex is growing his hair out now, too.
Oh man.
Sort of like doing the double windmill thing like Judas Priest down the road. It's going to be just
Alex,
totally hilarious.
Alex looks like a rock star.
Alex is a lunatic. He's my brother, man, but he's a lunatic, man. He's crazy.
But anyway, mm-hmm. Yes, this is Ghostly Talk. Mm-hmm. I'm Doug.
I am Scott L.
And I am Karma.
And of course, today we have as our special guest, Diane Goodman Larson.
An encyclopedia of information, obviously.
Yeah, because last time she wowed us with Atlantis, and through her travels, as she experiences things while in an altered state. She experiences things from the perspective of past and past lives and things like that, mm-hmm. that she's had, and she's here to share with us all the information. And today we're talking about
we're talking about Mars
and what she has experienced through the eyes of Diane, was it a Martian priest?
Martian scientist priest, yeah.
Yes.
That was what I was a long time ago. This occurred in 1994 when I attended a workshop with 15 people, other attendees that were there that were witnesses to what occurred with me. And I was literally taken back through time, through a wormhole, a sort of portal, and just sort of landed instantaneously within like 1 second, 2 seconds in a dome-shaped building in Atlantis, where I was standing in this room.
Trying to get them to not turn on the machine that they had built. Right?
Right, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And which, of course, they then overruled you, and all heck broke loose.
all heck broke loose.
Yeah.
We had what I call an intruder, sort of just some other interference that just changed everything and separated us. We were linked as one mind. We were telepathic. And we just sort of became separated as a consciousness group.
And we had, and that was, they had warned, you know, that was a warning to them, don't do this, don't do this. They ignored the warning, all heck broke loose. Now there's another warning.
There's this other warning that was given to us, yes.
And that's why it's so important that the stuff is happening on Mars, that we're putting up the probes and the satellites to monitor the stars and monitor our environs.
Yes,
so that's why
we have all of the telescopes and Hubble scopes and all these other types of scopes that are being sent out there. I know that our telescopes down here and with our scientists and even the scientist priests we have here on Earth are working also sort of keeping a watch out for some things that come pretty close, that pass pretty close to us. They come through our stratosphere, through our atmosphere, and just keep on going. But the warning is that there's a possibility that we might miss something. It's not definite, but it's a prophecy in one sense and a warning in another. So I think our scientists are doing an excellent job. I think the main thing about the warning that I was given is that the beings that were out there, these cosmic brothers, are concerned that our timing might be off, so that it's important to get something up before before 2005, before 2004, and that's what they're doing right now.
And so it's very gratifying to see all of the scientific work going on as we speak. I mean, every day there's something new in the news.
Yeah.
About space and astronomy and the and of course Mars is really big news.
Well,
so it's really important that all this is happening now.
Yeah, it's very important. In as much as whatever the warning is about is quite a few years away. You know, perhaps in prophecies, it is said to be around 2010. In some cases, 2012. In another situation that is different from something coming from outer space, which might very well happen just here on the planet, there's a prophecy about the year 2008. So all these things are actually being put in place now, and our scientists are working very hard, and I think they're doing a great job so far. One of the things that's happening is with regard to some of the old pictures that are being photos being analyzed, is that we find that the constellations out there in the cosmos were something that were reflected in the layout of some of the pyramids you were just mentioning, the pyramids and the structures on Mars, on the Martian desert floor.
Mm-hmm.
So what I found in looking at some of them is that just like you look at the flow of light from the magnetic fields forming a pyramid shape, when you stand up here on our planet and look at Mars out there, you see a sort of pyramid shape that is made from the light or from the magnetic fields. So just like you see that when you look at the Mars in conjunction with its moons and so on, likewise there are other symbols and geometries that are seen in examining the layout of the pyramids on the surface of the planet, primarily around the Cydonia area. So in one photograph, what we see is the Pleiades constellation, and it is seen as a specific set of pyramids. And in examining the light from the various stars that make up the Pleiades, we find a variety of sacred geometry forms which the Martian race chose to mirror in the building and layout of their pyramids on Mars. So in Cydonia can be found at least four other symbols patterned in one set of pyramids, in this set of, particular set of pyramids. The Egyptian civilization also has a strong connection to the Pleiades, and in my memory, from my time travel event in association with Atlantean history, what I recall is that the temple or school of Luxor, which I found out about following the Atlantean civilization, described in my memory a return to Atlantis. There was a group of people who looked like Egyptians. They were working with the Martian scientist priests in Atlantis. You know, they dressed with all the bronze and the copper colors and very revealing type of attire at that time.
Yeah.
It's like you see them on the papyrus sheets that we have now.
Exactly.
But to the eyes of the scientist, priest, or artist, when you look at the Pleiades, what you see may reveal these sacred geometry forms. And they're emanated by the magnetic fields or by the light from the celestial bodies that make up the Pleiades. And from this, we may be inspired to model and create, the ancient Martians, I should say, may have been inspired to model and create their complexes in harmony with the heavenly order of things, or the divine, as they did back then as builders. So these are all mirrored on the surface or of the planet or on the desert floor. For example, one of the things that I saw that was very obvious was the ancient symbol of the Ankh, which is said to have originated in Egypt, yet it is seen in the Pleiades, and it is reflected on the surface of the Martian structures. Number two, a partially veiled Kabbalistic cross is also traceable by the emanation of the magnetic fields from the bodies that make up the Pleiades, or the light from the stars, and these are mirrored on Mars on the desert floor. Number three, there's also a lion in the Pleiades constellations, if you sort of trace it out with your eyes. The lion is seen here on the armors of knights of ancient times here on Earth. The lion is seen on military flags, on our coats of arms here, on our flags. It's worn by royal families here in various countries, and seen on churches and cathedrals here on our planet. So, and they've become very significant and very important here. But these things are reflected in the constellations and mirrored on the Martian floor. So there's this sort of a triangular connection going on. The lion that is seen in this particular symbol from the Pleiades constellation looks to me like a lion that's standing on two legs. And then also you have the face on Mars sculpture. Number four, the other symbol that I see is a veiled Ankh, which is crossed by two diagonal lines to form an X, or perhaps two crossed swords. And this symbol is called an Enneagram. It is something that's worn here by our priests and reverends and bishops in the churches. It's usually somewhere on their robes or you know, those other pieces of clothing that they wear. Number five, the last symbol which I was able to determine can be interpreted to be a snake or a dragon, and is shown in the light of the Pleiadian celestial bodies and mirrored on the surface of Mars. So these symbols, which are of great importance to institutions here on Earth, are worn by kings and queens and priests and bishops. They are from different orders of schools of magic, and have various versions of these as tools of ritual magic and religion here. We have these orders that I'm referring to, like the Rosicrucians and things like that. They have these various versions of the tools of ritual magic and religion here on the planet. The Ankh itself is a symbol of life, which was worn by deities and is still used by priests and orders as a sacred symbol or a cross. It's a symbol of the breath of life, really, is what I should say. It represents eternal life, and it was used in the Egyptian culture and also by ancient priests. And it was primarily used by the Martian scientist priests. It was very important to them back then when I was a part of that contingent. The Ankh was of significance, too. The veiled Kabbalistic cross shape is something that's shaped out by the pyramids on Mars and is reflected also from the constellations above. And that can be found in our cathedrals here on Earth, our logos, ancient seals of royal families and religious scrolls and so on. So the sword symbol, which looks like a key, which I just call the Enneagram, that's used in mystery schools, in churches, primarily like the Catholic churches. And it represents, in some orders, the flow of the breath of life. So I guess you've heard about, you know, the breath of life, which is something that gives you immortality. It's something associated with immortals. What is also shown is a veiled flow of kundalini energy, something familiar to the Martian scientist priests. So all of these are traced out with the pyramids on the Martian surface, and reflected from the constellations above. So you see all these interesting things on the desert floor if you have the eye to sort of recognize them. So in my knowledge as an ancient scientist priest, it is evident that the sacred geometry utilized by the Martian builders in their structures, because of various constellations in the cosmos and because of the gigantic size of the sculptures there, it's my belief that all of this connects Mars to places like Nazca, Peru, here on Earth, connects Mars to Egypt, it connects Mars to Atlantis, and connects Mars to the Pleiades and other constellations. So as we continue with all of our probes and rovers that we're sending up there, I'm pretty sure that very soon, you know, we will have definite proof, physical proof, that life did come from there here. And then there's also the Sphinx connection here in Egypt, and the face on Mars, which is in Cydonia, which we mentioned briefly earlier. I have a few quotations about that, which I'd like to read just for you They're very short.
Okay. Definitely.
Definitely, please.
Definitely.
It comes from one of the chapters in my book entitled Sphinx, Sculpture or Divine Being. And it starts here, quote, "Behold the imperishable witness to the evolution of the human races from the divine, and especially from the androgynous race, the Egyptian Sphinx, the divine hermaphrodite." And that's a quote, quote-unquote, taken from H.P. Blavatsky, The Secret Doctrine, Volume 2. And basically it says that the Egyptian Sphinx is referred to in our teachings and dictations from the adepts, people like the cosmic beings, Kuthumi, El Moria, and so on, as the imperishable witness to the evolution of human races from the divine. In this particular chapter, from an old book called The Secret Doctrine by Blavatsky, there's this other short quote, which I'll do for you. It says, "An impenetrable veil of secrecy was thrown over the secret esoteric religious mysteries taught after the submersion of the last remnant of the Atlantean race some 12,000 years ago, lest they should be shared by the unworthy and so desecrated." And so the Sphinx itself, they're saying, is something from the androgynous race. It's called the divine, it represents the divine hermaphrodite. So I believe it's male and female, as reflected on the surface of Mars. It's also hominid and leonine, or people say hominid and feline. And last time I saw it, it didn't look very very much like the early photographs that they sent. It looked like it was damaged or eroded, and I disagree with the person who said it's just a rock. It's not.
Well, I know...
I know that for a fact.
In regards to the Sphinx, I've done a bit of reading on that, and it's been discussed with certain circles that the Sphinx itself has, the face of the Sphinx itself was recut. If you look at the body of the Sphinx itself, it's very large. It's a very large statue.
Yes, it is.
It's huge, as a matter of fact.
It is.
The body and the head are completely out of proportion nowadays, though. And they're saying that possibly, I believe, oh, geez. Of course I forget now that I have to remember it. One of the later pharaohs close to Cheops' reign recut the face, had it re-sculptured out to look like him. So I know
that's our Sphinx here on our planet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Our Sphinx here.
The one here.
In regards to this one, yeah.
Yeah, but it has this very ancient connection to Mars. And not only to Mars, but to an ancient race, which doesn't exist here on our planet anymore, which was an androgynous race.
Mm-hmm.
Androgynous meaning both male and female.
Okay.
And for some reason it was built along with the pyramids out there by an ancient Atlantean god by the name of Thoth, who I believe from the ancient teachings actually built the pyramids in Egypt. And,
so the pyramids weren't built. I'm sorry. The pyramids were not built by man then. I mean, that's what you're basically saying? As far as our pyramids.
By our Egyptians from a few hundred thousand years? No, they were built by this ancient god by the name of Thoth. He was a very powerful god.
I'm familiar with Thoth, yeah.
Yeah, his name was Thoth, and he built our pyramids out there. And I believe he also has some very strong connection to Mars, but he definitely was an ancient Atlantean god. That much I know.
You said the race of the people that no longer exist on Earth.
Yes.
The male and female. Isn't there still known women that are born with?
Well, there are hermaphrodites. They're born.
They're sort of a remnants, like this genetic sort of anomaly that takes place every now and then. You find out of every couple of hundred thousand people or every couple of million people that are born here. You find that it's reflected in their physical expression. People who are born both male and female.
Is there a connection there?
They're known as, the ancient name for them is the hermaphrodite.
Is there? Yeah. Do you think that there's a connection there? Like maybe they're trying to, like, maybe...
Come back? Is that what you mean?
Exactly, or toss a few.
No, it's just
there.
That, you know, we are such a mixed race of beings here on planet Earth. There are all kinds of people who have... sort of played around and done things with our genome or genealogy or physicality, and there are all kinds of divine beings and other types of cosmic beings, extraterrestrials that are out there, some of whom want to come down here on the planet and some of who actually do come down here to walk among us. So you might find these situations occurring, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with them, but that's, you know, there's so many races that are out there that come down here that you might find that when they're born, that the physical expression reflects what that being might have been before they came into incarnation here on the earth. So there are all kinds of races of beings out there, all kinds of life forms. And a lot of them do come down here to try to guide us. They come down here to observe us. They come down here just to have fun. They come down here to do research. So it's any number of situations occurring.
This Diane, the symbology that you were talking about, the Ankh and the swords and keys and things like that, I've seen the photos, you know, in South America of those just humongous etchings or whatever that are just huge. I don't remember those.
The Peru.
In Peru. I don't remember those being there, like ox. I thought they were things like grasshoppers.
Yeah, they look like animals, some of them. I remember distinctly that one of them is a monkey. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a monkey. There's also one that looks like a man, a sort of like a what you might call a stick man, but sort of like a man. Yeah, they're huge, and
but they're not.
I don't know who put them there. I do know that for some reason I have this sort of magnetic situation going on where I'm very drawn to, magnetized by the area of Peru, South America, Brazil, that area down there, and I believe it all links back to the Martian scientist priests. What I will say is that when we left Mars, we were looking for some place with altitude that's very high up, mountains, you know, high levels, high ground. I'm not sure what that was about because I haven't really delved into it by going back through time or going back to have a look at to see what that was about. But it might have had something to do with atmosphere and the ability to breathe here. That we may have sought out places that were high, like mountainous places. But yeah, some of that might be connected with the Martians. Some of it might be connected with the Anunnaki.
Oh, that's, yeah.
It might be both.
That's another race.
That's another race. Yeah, yeah. They're much bigger than the Martians were. Yeah.
Pulling away from this a little bit, but keeping on subject somewhat. I did have a question. I have been doing some reading on Mars and the photographs, because we talked about those pretty extensively here.
Yeah.
My question basically is, I've heard mixed opinions on this, too, that a lot of the pictures that come back, they're obviously screened by the people that are in control of the robots and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
And now, I grew up, and all of us down here have grown up, looking at Mars as the red planet.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the red planet. You know, I read it in all my little elementary books, red planet this, red planet that. But I have been listening to certain radio shows and reading books saying that the pictures have been, sometimes they're colorized for certain reasons. I've been told actually that there are certain areas of Mars that they're actually like, it's a bluish color. Like literally blue. The ground is not like blue as in, you know, deep, you know, blue, but it has a bluish tint to it. Other pictures were more like just a very dingy color, so just the moon, I mean, it's basically ash and rock, whatnot, so more or less a grayish color. But we're always left with the impression through the photography that's been taken there as of late, too, that the color is red. It's a red planet, it's a desert-like, you know, structure, and it's all red. Have you heard anything about this? Has anyone brought that up to you? Because, I mean, from what you've been saying, it's more or less a red planet also.
Yeah, it is a red planet. My memory of Mars just starts with the beings, the cosmic beings who took me back, so I could find out what happened with regard to why we left there and came here. And it was mostly about what happened here, because here is the most important time right now with regard to Atlantis, what happened there, and what seems to be happening again as the time cycles progress. They took me back to a point where I just saw myself and the contingent of Martian scientist priests leaving the surface of Mars and moving through the atmosphere, leaving our very Martian masculine magnetic fields and moving into the magnetic fields of planet Earth, which were extremely feminine and very, very traumatic for us to experience, because we found it traumatic because the Earth was very soft, very feminine sort of energies that were emanating that we had to we had to move through. And I know that sounds strange, but it's the truth. We were just a totally different being. So I don't really have any, I didn't go back further than sort of the lifting off from Mars to find out what was going on there or to see a whole lot of anything. I do have this night image in my mind. It's a night image which doesn't tell me what color the sky is, where we are walking around or rushing around to some very, very huge pyramids that seem to be 2-3 times the height of the ones we have in Egypt, putting away scrolls. That is very prominent in my mind for some reason. As far as the skies go, like I said, I just remembered lifting off. I can't really tell, but they might have been blue. They might have been blue. And the red, the redness that you see and the blueness that you see in the photographs is being said here that some of it is being filtered out and changed and so on. So if that's something that NASA is doing, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
you know they're doing it.
What's happening is they're using the photos that they're taking are physically black and white photos, and then what they do is they apply the color from that's discerned from different filters, and
to make it look prettier.
Well, one of the filters is an infrared, and this infrared is skewing it toward the red, or something like that. That's how it was explained one article.
You better believe it if they see like a Martian walking by and they get a picture of it, you know they're going to be like,
we're not showing this one.
Yeah.
But no, they the thing is for example, one of the photos that was sent back was of the NASA logo.
Yeah.
And it was not blue. I mean, it's blue here on Earth, but it was not blue in the photo. It was washed out and leaning toward pink.
Yeah.
And of course they're saying, okay, I don't care. Yeah, I don't care where you are. a blue logo is going to be blue.
Yeah.
I mean, it was blue when it was put on, and now it's pink. So they've explained that away with the filters that they use.
Okay, that's just some things that I was reading. I was very curious about. Why don't we take a quick break though?
Okay. Let's do that.
We're going to move on here.
And we'll talk about...
The genetic engineering. Legacy of the Martians, which is time traveling.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes.
So it's going to be awesome.
All right,
so
we'll be right back.
You heard of the Internet's newest Ghost Talk radio show? Visit us on the web at www.floridaghosthunters.com. Our show airs live on Sunday evenings between 9 and 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join us if you dare.
Ghostly Talk, sticking our nose in the world's business.
What happened to your journalistic responsibility?
What do you mean journalistic responsibility? I talk about aliens for crying out loud.
Yeah? And what do you think aliens are?
Christ talking about this kind of stuff.
Aliens'
responsibility is usually holding the truth back. I'm trying to bring it back out to people and let them see these things.
There you go.
I think we got one vote on your side, Clyde.
What are you talking about?
Well, you do. A lot of people are on my side, I think.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Ghost Hunting, my ethereal anti-drug.
We'll be right back.
my favorite Segway thing. Yes. Anyway, this
are
is...
Are you feeling better now?
Ah, yeah, this is...
British punk.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Karma, and I am Red.
Red. Red is in the red.
Occasionally pink. I try to keep it a little pink.
Don't filter me through an IR lens. That's all I have to say.
Damn, that was hot.
Yes, we're talking about Mars. We're talking about Mars, and who better to talk to about Mars than Diane Goodlin? Blech, I'm sorry.
There's an outtake.
There's a big a big faux pas. Diane Goodman Larson, who was a Martian scientist priest,
yes,
and was taken back in an experience, taken back through time to experience her life as a Martian scientist priest, and she's telling us about that and the outcomes. About the warning that had happened earlier about Atlantis, which of course we all pretty much know what happened to Atlantis. They didn't heed the warnings, and then and the current warning now.
Keeping your eyes peeled for this thing that might hit us.
This thing that might hit us, and it's time to put stuff up there and start exploring outside of our atmosphere, and that's what they're indeed the scientists of Earth are doing now. Thank heavens.
I'm buying a telescope.
You are?
Yeah, well, never, you know.
My niece has one. I was thinking of stealing it from her. And
I bought one a long time ago, but I ended up looking at my neighbors all the time.
Oh, yeah. That's,
you can never have too many people watching.
Right.
You
know? Oh, I think so.
But who do you call?
Good question.
Who do you call?
I don't know. So anyway, we're going to talk about, Diane, we're going to talk about Martian engineering.
Genetic engineering.
I'm sorry, Martian genetic engineering. And let's see what happened. This was something that you were involved in as a Martian scientist, Reese, or something that you know about?
It's something I was involved in. Something that I know about is something that was done in Atlantis by a small contingent. I call my contingent of scientist priests. Then Atlantean scientist priests, Martian scientist priests, and that was a part of a time travel event that occurred a few years ago, where I was allowed to see who we were that came here, where we came from. What Atlantis was about with regard to the sinking in one day and night, as mentioned by Plato, and various other details that connected us with Mars. For instance, our robes were striped off-white or beige and red, the Martian red or the rust color. So we even wore things that reminded us or represented where we came from. With ropes around our waists and sandals. We were about 10 feet tall, and we had no hair, you know, things like that. So so I usually go back. I go back in time through what I call time travel events, and some people call time shifting. Like, I know there's a British friend of mine who talks about time shifting. And then I'm usually taken forward by these cosmic beings who usually have something specific that they want me to know about or want me to write about to share with people. Very often in the events that are into the future as opposed to into the past, I'm accompanied by someone very powerful. At any rate, however, one of the things I'd like to mention is that one of our very renowned scientists here by the name of Tom Van Flanders, with regard to the face on Mars, is that he said that the face is hominid. It's not alien animal. In his exploding planet theory, he mentions that in his interviews that Mars was an escaped former moon of a now exploded parent planet. And it sort of fits in with what we see in images of the planet and the character of what humans, he says, will one day be able to construct on our own moon. So we're moving forward into things like that. And he also says that many of the images have a familiar humanoid or terrestrial appearance, and these images on Mars therefore raise the possibility that humans are a transfer species. So following his line of thinking that there was a major explosion event in the solar system some 3.2 million years ago, his information that the explosion may have marked the end of the Builder's homeworld, It coincides with my knowledge then that the contingent left their home planet to come to Earth looking for another place to survive, which is what we did, and I mentioned earlier. That humans are a transfer species from his point of view lends some relevance to the fact that through some merging of the races from Mars and Earth, then in all likelihood the DNA legacy, which I'm about to mention briefly, is something that I know of from ancient past and that it is real. So there are other people who also believe that there are beings who may have came from there here. One of the things that's being looked at now, too, which is kind of different from what I'm talking about, is something called panspermia. That's something that's being analyzed and circulated on the internet a lot. However, the genetic experiment and the technological experiments that I was able to go back and get a few details about all occurred in a circular dome-shaped building in Atlantis. They were in adjacent complexes, and these complexes were built of granite rock. The granite rock, what I thought to be the hardest rock known at the time, and the DNA activity was closed off by large electronic doors doors that had a massive symbol or a massive insignia on the front. And these doors were two interlocking circles. On these doors were two interlocking circles, which formed a sacred geometry form known as the Vesica Pisces. So what I experienced as I was literally walking through this building in Atlantis back in 1994 was that I saw myself approaching this really, really huge set of double doors that opened from the middle and one went left and one went right, and they sort of went into the walls, sort of slid right into the walls in opposite directions. And the way that they opened was as the Martian scientist priests approached these doors, I believe it was their signature, or their vibration, the Martian vibration that allowed the doors to open. In other words, no other being, Earth being or no other being would have been able to open the doors without this specific vibration that they had. The Vesica Pisces, however, is this massive symbol which was inscribed on the huge double doors as you entered what I call the creation room in the Martian experiment room, is something that is mentioned by other authors of sacred geometry like Robert Lawler, who describes the symbol as being a representation of the intermediate realm which partakes of both the unchanging and the changing principles, both the eternal and the ephemeral, and that human consciousness thus functions as a mediator balancing the two complementary poles of consciousness. It's all connected with this symbol called the Vesica Pisces. It's two interlocking circles. And so I call the symbol a symbol of creation. And what it is, in fact, is the first motion of creation, which creates light. It represents the first two naturally dividing human cells of the original eight cells of a developing fetus. And the ancient Martians had this symbol displayed very boldly on the double doors that I said opened automatically by sensors. The door opened directly into a clinical room. And as our vibrations activated the doors as we approached it, when these doors opened, what I see in there is three people, three Martian scientist priests, or Atlantean scientist priests, I prefer to call them at this point, who worked behind these doors on the genetic manipulation. And once inside of the doors, a Martian in a white coat, much like the white coats you see when you go to the doctors or the hospitals here, you know, what our surgeons wear, there was one person who was close to the door who operated a mini computer, which was situated immediately as you step into the room behind the closed door. This computer that I saw closely resembled a miniature of a hot fusion plant that was disassembled at Princeton University Complex a few years ago. The other two Martians in white coats or medical gowns were at the far end of a very long, narrow, white marble table that was approximately 20 feet long. The small computer seemed to have functions that will, at this point, remain a mystery to me, except to say that it also connects with cold fusion in looking back through my memory. It was about the size of one of our little PCs that you have, you know, that sits on your desk at work,
yeah,
or at home or whatever that might be.
Mm-hmm.
But it was extremely powerful. Immediately behind the door, once you close, the first person with the computer stood behind the top end of the marble table. In front of him was a group of energy bodies who looked very distorted. I call them energy bodies because they didn't look like physical humans. They had a human appearance, but they weren't actual three-dimensional flesh and bone type things. They were energy bodies. And they were sort of crowded up together as a group. I don't really know, in recalling this, exactly what we were doing with them. What I will say, however, is that our scientists here on our planet have the ability to remove the soul or the light bodies or energy bodies from the physical bodies. And somewhere on our planet, I've heard it mentioned by people like Bearden, you know, those other researchers and prominent scientists. Somewhere on our planet, this process may be being conducted now with regard to what I saw happening back then, thousands of years ago. So they were actually doing this genetic engineering back there, and so what I can say is that what you'll find is that we can time travel. We can time travel as a result of what the Martian scientists priests did in combining the energies of the Martians with the energies of the human beings at that time. I like to say that we here can time travel as a result of that. That's what the legacy of the Martian scientist priests is. Recently I heard one of the NASA officials, just less than 2 weeks ago actually, mentioned that we are the Martians. That's what he's saying. He's saying we are the Martians. And what in fact is the truth is that we do have some of their energies. We do have this legacy that they left with us and for us from ancient times.
So then how does it happen? Because I have to say, we just got done talking about Bill Nell and Philadelphia Experiment and all that kind of mm-hmm. thing, where at Montauk that they had the chair, and the person operating the chair would use the energy, you know, from these immense energy creating locomotive engines to create a time tunnel kind of thing, and then you could go back and forth in time. But I'm wondering, is this is a little more energy or internal energy based, right? How does it work, the time travel?
With regard to time traveling?
Yeah.
Well, what based on my training and my knowledge and my experience from Mars and into Atlantis, and the teaching that is now presently, which has been brought back actually by a gentleman by the name of a teacher by the name of Junto Melchizedek, this is done by something called a Merkaba, which is a field of light energy, which is generated by using the mind. You create it using meditations. That's how it's taught now. You create it during meditation, called the Merkaba meditation, and you just activate this field of energy, which is it is essential to life. It's a field that shoots out from the base of the spine, about 50 feet around us, and when it's activated properly, and it takes maybe a couple of months for it to remain permanent, it looks like a UFO. It actually has the shape of a disc shape or a saucer shape energy field or energy envelope that is around the body. And so because of who we are, human beings, and other people who use it to travel, time travel, you can just program it, if you will, by saying different speeds. So you just say in your mind or with your voice, various speeds, beyond the speed of light, below the speed of light, things like that. And it's essential to real, true time travelers. And it was used here over the last several years to get as many people as possible, human beings, activated, their fields, this energy envelope, up and running and spinning. It spins counterclockwise. So it's a counterclockwise envelope of energy that spins around the body, and is generated, first of all, by something called the star tetrahedron. There's a star which is like the three-dimensional star of David that we all have. We were born with it. And when it spins, when it's activated and it spins using your mind and your intention and your magnetism, it shoots out this envelope of energy that looks like a disc field. The star field that I call a star tetrahedron with regard to the technological experiments in Atlantis by the Martians was something that was used as technology. The star device that we mentioned in our last interview that was suspended by electromagnetic fields and electrogravity, and it rotated very powerfully, very slowly when I first sort of landed in the dome-shaped room in Atlantis in that workshop that I mentioned. So the star field is connected with the Martians. It's also a symbol that is very prominent in the Melchizedek, the order of Melchizedek priests. At any rate, though, one of the things that I really wanted to mention is that this legacy, as a result of the genetic engineering done there, is something that seems to be in the process of being triggered right now in human beings. If you take a look around, you see all the movies that are coming out deal with time travel. A sort of time travel type of movie, I guess you can say, was Paycheck. I don't know if you saw that. It dealt with a type of memory thing, but if you can look at it in a different way and see, too, that it was about time travel to some extent. Then there's another one called Torque. What I'm finding is that a lot of time travel movies are coming out, and I think what they're trying to do is maybe help the humans to trigger, to remember now as we go forward how to do that, this time travel situation, our ability that we have. What is recombinant DNA? In 1973, there were four scientists in California who conducted an experiment that altered the way genetic research was conducted in our modern civilization. Names were Cohen and Chang from, I believe it was, a university in California somewhere. And what they did was they created a new form of DNA by splicing together two pieces of DNA from different sources. And they injected the new DNA molecule into a bacteria cell, which resulted in an organism that was new, that had never before existed. And subsequently, they proceeded to apply these techniques to transfer genes between two different forms of bacteria. And then they transferred the genes from a frog into a bacterial cell, and they called their new DNA molecules chimeras. Chimeras was known as, in mythology, as the being who had the body of a goat, the head of a lion, and the tail of a serpent. So these techniques known as DNA splicing and transferring of genes became most powerful, very powerful experimental tools, and they are right now in our modern science, as you've been seeing in all of the news reports and all of the research that's going on. They're powerful in modern science, and they were very powerful in ancient times as well. So this is what is called recombinant DNA, gene cloning, gene transfer, or genetic engineering, and it's what I call designer genes. So what the Martians, or that aspect of the Atlantean scientist priest did, was also recombinant DNA a long time ago in Atlantis. They had their own brand of designer genes, and what I recalled as we dealt with the humans, there were no life forms or that were created like animal creations, based on my memory. I don't see anything like, you know, something that's part goat or part cow or anything like that that we did. But my memory also was just something that was very specific to what was needed for that time that's connecting now to the present time. But what we did also was that we, as scientist priests, we had the knowledge of the laws of the universe, metaphysical laws, which allowed us to take the genetic engineering a big step further. We knew how to create life, literally, working with the spirit body, the physical body, which I won't describe right now, but there was transference there as well using the technology. So they utilized it in a very heavy way, neurobiology, and they took it down to the finer nerves, etheric nervous systems, which we in our present state cannot see normally with psychic abilities. What I'm saying is we cannot see it normally without psychic abilities, you know, these etheric nervous systems. And we can't see it without enhancing technologies. So they took the DNA experiment and genetic engineering down to the energy level in and around the physical body. So the energy level was something that was deliberately ignored up until recently by our modern science and scientists, but that's in medicine, but that's really changing very fast right now because they're using like therapeutic energy type hands-on healing and hands being laid on over people's bodies, over the chakras and so on. So things are changing quite a bit in that field. Just this week, actually, there was an announcement by the Koreans where they have announced or published a recipe for cloning. So that's really big news at the moment. Scientists right now have genetically manipulated the human stem cells in the first step towards making our bodies, our so-called master cells, into a useful tool. They now have a way to help control how the cells develop so that they can direct them to become brain tissue, heart, or pancreatic tissue. And there's this very prominent leader in the field by the name of Dr. Zwacke of Germany, and he states that it allows use to manipulate every part of the human genome that we want. And when the human embryonic cells that are left over from couples who are attempting to have babies, you know, the ones from test tube babies, cells from fertilized eggs, which are at the stage where it has divided, let's say, just a few times, and then they extract it at the critical stage where they can still remember, where the cells can still remember how to become any kind of cell. That's the sort of thing that's going on at this point in time in our research. This happens before the cell gets older and before it's programmed to the point where it cannot easily change direction in development. So the hope is that these cells can be used to replace damaged cells such as spinal cords, you know, severed spinal cords, diseased cells as in Parkinson's disease, or just cells that die from like cancer, so on and so forth, or cells with people who have diabetes. So this scientist, Dr. Zwacke, whose work is published pretty often in the journal Nature Biotechnology, said that this method will enable scientists to accomplish this. With this method, the genes can be manipulated so as to control the kind of tissue that the cells form. He said you can purify the tissues. However, there's some kind of a drawback where the human embryonic stem cells, they tend to remember a little too much sometimes, and they can form a random mass known as a teratoma instead of the desired tissue. So there's all this stuff and research that's going on, and somehow or other the Koreans have managed to really gone ahead and made it known to the world that they have this recipe which they've just published. And things are really getting ahead very quickly. The concern, however, is that we might get ahead of ourselves. And the technology, I've heard some of the doctors saying that the technology is already running away from us. It's like hitting you over the head and just leaving you behind. Some of these scientists are already complaining. It's just moving very quickly.
Mm. So is it true that they can just, like, grow a heart if they wanted to?
That's what's being done. That's what they want to do very much here in the United States, especially. There are doctors who would like very much to work more in-depth with the stem cell research, but I believe that our commander-in-chief has instituted some laws or implemented some laws to sort of keep this in check. So what's happening is that a lot of our scientists are having to go outside of this country. And so you find places like Korea and Germany who are doing it rather liberally without any restrictions on them that are coming forward with the new results and the new developments and the new creations with the stem cells, new hearts, new tissue, new things to help people who have diabetes, brain cells, things like that. So we're finding that other countries are sort of running a little bit ahead ahead of us with this technology.
So pretty soon that we're just going to have like a parts store where like if something goes bad, it's like
wonder.
You can go down to like AutoZone and pick up a new carburetor. Well, you can
just go buy body parts.
Body Zone.
I head in that direction. That's what the concern is. They're trying to prevent that from happening. Although I'm not so sure. You know, something always gets out of hand. Things like that do occur.
We already have black market body parts. I mean, that's always been
going on. I know. I've heard some people selling them on eBay.
Yeah. That's happened, but I mean, that's been going on for a number of years. Literal black market human body parts.
But
I've heard
stolen
of that.
Parts.
Well, yeah, they're stolen.
Pretty soon, that won't be happening no more.
Well, that would be good.
Just go to the store and just get a new one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, legalized body parts, I guess.
I mean, I don't know, but it's all absolutely. Absolutely phenomenal stuff. I'm glad they're continuing their research. But you know what? We do have to close the show.
It's another one of those shows.
It's another one of those shows. So for more information, Diane,
yes?
Where do we go on the internet?
Oh, well, you can reach me. My email is M, the letter M, Diane, D-I-A-N-N-E, the number 5, at hotmail.com. So that's M, Diane, 5 at hotmail.com, and my website is www.doortoatlantis.com.
Excellent.
Definitely check that out.
And it's also linked up on ghostlytalk.com, so check it out. And yeah,
this is a fat chunk of information.
My time is up, huh?
Time is up.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about designer babies, but maybe we can do that a little later on.
That's something that's been going on. I mean, they hit the news last year big time with the Raelians and stuff. So it would be very interesting to we do want to discuss that.
Okay, but, yeah, I look forward to doing that with you next time around.
Okay. Thank you, Diane.
Stay on the line, okay?
Okay.
Stay on the line here. We're going to close the show out.
So that was indeed Ghostly Talk. Remember, we're on Pioneer Radio Network. That's pioneer.rolo.net. Mm-hmm. We're live on Sundays from 7 till 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Mm-hmm. We have a website, www.ghostlytalk.com. Stay tuned because 2 hours from now or 3 hours, 3 hours from now is W Paranormal.
Yeah, our W sister Paranormal. Show.
Yep, out of Michigan.
We should mention
well.
One quick thing, though, before we do drop off. Something that's coming up that's going to be available to the public.
Oh, yeah?
We are going to be releasing our first edition of Ghostly Talk t-shirts.
Yes, we are. Oh, we're working on that.
In conjunction with a joint project with one of our website members, one of the people on our website. Actually, if you go on our site, you see the picture on our front page with all four of us in our ghost suits.
Yeah,
around a gigantic mic. That was one of the members. I believe he goes by
Coconut Monkey.
He's an amazing graphics designer, and we decided to tap him on this and see if he wanted to help us out. And of course, he did it valiantly. It's been like working. You know what? I really feel bad because it's like he sent me about 15 emails like with different pictures. Going, what do you think about this? Sucks. Send it back. Do that with this. Sucks. Do this. You know, but we just, you know, we wanted to get it just perfect.
And awesome stuff. So
we're looking to get those out pretty soon.
Yep.
We'll have more information on the site about that, but we want to just let everybody know that if you want to, you know, we might be able to start setting up some type of pre-order thing. If we get enough emails on that saying, hey, I'd like to get one, we'll start returning mails going, okay, we're going to set this up with you guys. But right now, we just want to let you know what was going on with
that.
I'm going
to buy one.
I know I am.
Because they're going to look really cool.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to look really cool.
Well, he actually put up Coconut Monkey in his journal. Mm-hmm. He put up a picture of Laura Croft.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing the Ghostly Talk t-shirt.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
So check out the journal section of Ghostly Talk. You guys,
we're out of here.
This has been Ghostly Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be back with more guests next week.
Excellent.
So, because our guest series and all. So, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Karma.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
we must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from the Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.